Welcome back to Beyond the Uniform. I'm Justin Asiri, and my goal is to help military veterans thrive in their civilian career. My guests today are both from Palantir, Chris Musselman and Mike Adams.
When you believe you can do anything, you will oftentimes persist, endure, drive harder and harder and harder in a way that isn't always beneficial. And I think a lot of us have carried a pack for so long and done so many wonderful things that we're genuinely humbled to have been participants in and even proud of, that we feel like when we slide over into the commercial side, we just keep running, and we don't really realize the toll that some of those burdens have taken on us over time.
In today's episode, I interview not one, but two incredible veterans who work at a company called Palantir. Both of them work in the functional role of business development. So in this episode, first and foremost, we do a deep dive into both Palantir and the functional role of business development, why it may or may not be a good fit for listeners, how to get there, things like that. We also, though, talk about a whole host of things applicable to any career path, and I really enjoyed this conversation. Mike and Chris are both extraordinary human beings. We talk about listening to your gut when you make decisions. We talk about how veterans may have more technical experience than they think. We talk about taking a step back before making a career decision, how hard this is, but how crucial it is. We talk about taking the time to find your own way of advocating for yourself. And I have to have a quick aside here. The number one, two, or three thing that comes up in conversations is how veterans often struggle to advocate for themselves in an interview and networking, things like that. Chris has the best answer I've ever heard on that. It's towards the end of the episode, but over the top fantastic. And the quality of advice is on par with that throughout. As always, at beyondtheuniform.org, you will find more episodes just like this. You will find show notes that give links to everything we discussed. They've got some great recommendations around books, which, by the way, in the show notes, you'll also find a link to get a free audiobook through Audible because of Beyond the Uniform. Check that out, but check out the show notes as well. Special thanks to Colby_V. Colby on March 19th wrote on Beyond the Uniform's iTunes podcast reviews, wealth of information, !5 stars, great collection of resources and insight from Justin. He always seems to ask the right questions of guests that get to what the listeners want to hear. Cannot recommend this podcast to transitioning military veterans more. Really appreciate the skills, episodes, and book reviews too. Keep it up, Justin. Thank you, Colby. Thank you to all of you who have left reviews on iTunes. And thank you for everyone who listens. We wouldn't be here without your support. So with that, let's dive in to my conversation with Mike and Chris. Well, joining me today, both today in Charlotte, North Carolina, my guests are Michael Adams and Chris Musselman. Mike and Chris, welcome to Beyond the Uniform.
Hey, thanks. Great to be here.
I want to give listeners a very abbreviated bio for each of you. First of all, Chris Musselman works in business development at Palantir. He started out at the Naval Academy, after which he served for over 21 years with the Navy SEALs. He holds a master's in international public policy from the Johns Hopkins University. And Michael Adams is also in business development at Palantir. He started out at the Naval Academy, after which he served in the Navy for over 20 years as both a surface warfare officer and a member of the Judge Advocate General Corps. He holds a Juris Doctorate from Georgetown University and a Master of Laws from Harvard University. Before we dive in, any corrections or addendums to the intro?
Yeah, sounds great.
Okay. Awesome. And one last thing for listeners, way back when I first started Beyond the Uniform in episode 33, over 200 episodes ago and 2 years ago, I interviewed Britt Young, who at the time was chief of staff to the CTO at Palantir. So if this whets your appetite for Palantir, definitely check out that interview, one more perspective. So Chris and Mike, maybe to start things off, could you walk us through each of your transitions from the military, what that first job search was like and how you ended up at Palantir?
Yeah. So you guys, Justin, thanks. For me, there was no one driving piece that said now is the time. I was coming out of the White House. my wife and I were sitting around the house one day and we just kind of looked at each other and said, hey, you want to try something different? And we just said, yeah, maybe we do. And she said, okay. So here's the three pieces of guidance that I have. So military folks would love this, the fact that your wife gives you guidance. And that is one, I know that you can't slow down, but if you could do it a lot safer, that would be great. Second, when you're home, be home. Like no more two cell phones, no always running off, be reliable for us. And the third is if you could make us a little more financially stable in the future, that would be fantastic too. And then she sent me off and on my way. And so from the start, it was something I wanted to do was to do something completely different, to step out into the business world. And so I set a really high vision to say, someday I want to be a CEO, run my own thing. What do I need to do to get there? And for me, that was, I got to learn the business. I got to get out in front of the business and expose myself to it and learn. And so initially it was a lot of conversations. And those conversations always seemed to put me back in the national security space for obvious reasons. And it just, I listened to my gut and it just didn't feel right. And so that's when I reached out to Bethany Coates and Breakline. And I think we both took a chance on each other as a more senior officer. And then me not knowing exactly what the tech space was, but I committed to her for 2 weeks out in the valley, all her partnerships, and I gave it all I had. And I walked away from those 2 weeks like, this is the space, this is the energy that I feel, and these are the companies that I really want to pursue. And Palantir happened to be one of those.
Yeah, and I think for me, you know, some of the motivations to get out of the service and to sort of evolve in the next phase of our lives were similar. I had a couple of young children. I retired a little more than 2 years ago. My son is now six. My daughter is soon to be four. So a couple of young children. And so, you know, I was retirement eligible. I was working in the joint staff, you know, one of those quote high speed jobs, loving it, doing really well, had fun, served with the absolute best people in the world for a very long time. Was really, really fortunate to be in a lot of just phenomenal situations and really be a part of history. But, you know, for me, I also realized that part of what I was doing, I felt like I could do really without opening a book for the next 10 years of my career. Now, maybe that's an overstatement, but that's kind of how I felt at the time. As an attorney, that's not good. You don't want an attorney who isn't willing to open a book and go do something. And frankly, I wasn't willing. It was that I just kind of had hit a point where I'd done so much that I had a fear of becoming complacent, of not evolving as a person. And so for me, it was about, you know, the next challenge for me personally. It was about providing for my family in a more substantial way. And it was about creating a better environment for my wife and for my children, an opportunity to bring my wife home to Charlotte, North Carolina. And so I started looking around. But if I'm honest, I still didn't think I was actually going to get out. This is something I kind of cycled through throughout my career every few years thinking, well, maybe now I'll get out. Maybe now I'll get out. Maybe now I'll get out. And when I looked around, I realized there were some really interesting opportunities, some really fantastic opportunities. So I didn't go into Palantir immediately. I went to a major law firm. I was a partner out of our Charlotte office. I was doing technology and cyber work, working with fantastic people, and got into it. And then somewhere along the way, one of my really good friends and people that I trust dearly called me and said, hey, can you come talk to us about Palantir? And initially it was a conversation about helping Palantir do more work in Middle America, in the Carolinas, building our business and our brand in a real significant way around here, but still staying in my capacity as a lawyer in this other firm. But pretty quick onto those conversations, we realized that we could do something really impactful if I made the transition. And Palantir just offered me a fabulous opportunity.
That's great. I mean, I love between your two stories, you know, Chris, on the one hand, I love that sense of like listening to your body or like what feels good, you said, in that decision process. I think that sometimes I underestimate the value of that felt sense on things. And I love that thought too for Mike of seeking growth, you know, wanting growth and challenge. And I think that's one thing that all of us have enjoyed in the military is extreme challenges. And so realizing when you might not, when you might be looking for a new opportunity or a new growth in different ways, or when your family might be needing new things. And I'll call out for listeners that Chris mentioned Breakline Education. For listeners, I'll put in the show notes episode 54. I interviewed Bethany Coates, who founded Breakline. If we have time, we'll circle back with that with Chris, but there's a deeper dive on Breakline. It's a great program provided for free for veterans and gives a lot of clarity, as I'm sure you heard with Chris. So maybe to kind of start and lay the foundation, let's say that someone listening has never heard of Palantir before. How would you explain who you are as a company and what you do?
So I think if you want to talk about Palantir, you have to talk about why it was founded. So founded in 2004 with this idea of sense of service. And that sense of service continues to resonate today, and it resonates through the products at Palantir. So it started with a very niche focus of bringing a product to the national security enterprise, particularly the intel community, to go to track down terrorists. And that transitioned into a anti-money laundering, that transitioned into countering human trafficking. And then in that, internal to Palantir, we had to manage a bunch of big data, how we were handling clients, and that developed into the other product, which is on the sign behind us, and that is Foundry. And that's a whole nother conversation about what we do with that product, if that's something to interest you. But the part for Palantir with me is the mission driven, the purposeful space. I mean, as a transitioning military officer, I was driven by a higher cause for 20 years, and I needed to find that afterwards, even though some of my goals and ambitions were different. And that's what really drove me to Palantir, was that sense of purpose, that mission-driven aspect, and doing things that matter that brought me here.
I think Palantir is interesting in the sense that, you know, we're somewhat industry agnostic, right? We have clients across all industries. We deal in manufacturing, supply chain, healthcare, industrials, financial services. We have clients like Maersk and Merck and Airbus, Credit Suisse, and you could go on and on. But really at our core, what we are about, I believe, is about taking sort of the status quo, helping people elevate to what they think that the highest realm of possibility is, and then transforming that into something entirely new. Right, it's a data integration company. We're a software company, but what we're really about is sitting down with incredibly powerful platforms, incredibly smart and committed people, and developing these solutions that are just really, really impactful, as Chris said. But I think more than anything, what we do is something that people can't even conceptualize, and yet they would kill for if they knew it existed.
That's great. I mean, I think some of the things that resonate with me from the other interviews is how often members of the military, when they leave the military and in long afterwards, how they miss that sense of mission and purpose in the military. And so part of what you're speaking to is fulfilling, I'm sure, that need of like having a bigger purpose. Like some of the things that you mentioned around tracking down terrorists and human trafficking and all these things, that's something meaty that I think a lot of listeners could get behind. It's continuing that sense of public service that I think is foundational to a lot of who we are. And then I love that thought of operating at such a high level of in terms of caliber of people, the unbelievable infrastructure and technology that you're working with. When I lived in the Bay Area, I mean, Palantir is one of those companies that everyone's aware of. It has such an exceptional reputation, but you're rubbing shoulders with incredibly bright people working with the cutting edge solutions for today. So I think that's really exciting. Could you also talk about, there's different parts of Palantir, and one of them that I have listed here is Palantir Gotham and Palantir Foundry, which for viewers is on the sign behind Chris and Mike. What are those two things?
So they're both the fundamental products of Palantir. Gotham is one that resonates with me initially, will probably resonate with most of the listeners up front, and that is the to find the needle in the haystack, to put the X on someone or something or some relationship that allows you then either through intelligence means, military means, to go exploit that for national security. That's where it started. It's built on that now into, there's a machine learning component to it, which services insights that users maybe don't search for specifically. There's an AI component in a mapping that basically, I say it's the common operational picture I wish I had for 15 years in the Navy, to just monitor and manage a battle space and understand the risk that we're taking with certain operations. I mean, we're developing that, and it's phenomenal. Foundry, though, and I talked about this a little bit earlier, was that transition from our military product into how we manage all that internal data that said, hey, maybe other companies with big data problems could use this platform. And technically, it does all the dirty work of integrating all different types of data into that and servicing it so you can integrate your business with it. But for me, it's much greater. And here's what has resonated with folks outside Silicon Valley when I've had conversations. That is, this is a decision-making transformation tool. So I think of it like this. So back in the units that I led, we would make decisions. And in many cases, I was making those decisions. And you get PowerPoint briefs, you get read-aheads, you get all this stuff, or you get somebody with a very strong force of personality who's giving you a brief, who's making a recommendation. And things are always going through your head. And that is, you know, where did this person get all this information? Can I trust it? Is it just, you know, what is the recommendation that I'm getting? Is it just a sheer, you know, subject matter expert, or have we dug into these things? And then we talk about the risk. We used to talk about risks in terms of most likely enemy course of action and most dangerous course of action. The most dangerous was always catastrophic, and the most likely was always so obvious. But what is the greatest, what is the percentage of those? We know the answer based on the trends. We can make a better risk calculated decision here. But then in part of that, why, when I ask a question, does it take 3 weeks to get an answer? And now whatever opportunity I was trying to jump on has passed. But then when I make decisions, how do I know we got them right? Is it subjective or objective? That's what Foundry does to me as a decision maker, fundamentally transitions how you make decisions, how you gauge those decisions, and then transforms this. It's a knowledge management tool, not some sort of file database, not a portal, but something that lives along with your organization.
Yeah, and if I could add to that, I think one of the things that's great about Foundry, one of many things that's great about Foundry, is it's designed to allow hyper-technical users to excel, to write in multiple forms of code. We use open source, or to let someone who maybe is a senior decision maker who's not as technically savvy, but can sort of point and click and see to do the sort of minimal technical interaction, but still really utilize the tool in a powerful way. And everybody in between, right? If you think about the role of an analyst, right? Most analysts, whether you're on the government side or in the commercial side, don't do a lot of actual analysis. What they do largely is read and search for and report and restate and read and research and report on and restate, right? And then maybe 5% of their time, that of their skill set, is actually dedicated towards analysis. Now imagine if you could take all this disparate data, right, all these different sources, and use the technology to bring them together into more cohesive decision points, right? And now you could map out what those decision points are, and you can do analysis and compound analysis with that. And you can do that and empower users across the enterprise. We use the analogy at times of the Iron Man suit, right? The idea is, you have the person, you have the Tony Stark, who is, you know, oftentimes incredibly smart in and of themselves and able to do so much. But when you put the suit on, it's a game changer. And that's what Foundry is. It's a game changer.
That's great. And I'm sure for listeners who are in the military, they can think of how powerful this is in a military setting. But I think that it's also easy to see that the ability to take massive amounts of information from a widespread organization and then distill that into key insights that allow people to make better decisions, that's something that, you know, any company in any vertical in the world could leverage that. So I hope listeners get the sense of how broad sweeping this is as both a concept and a product. I also wanted to ask about, let's maybe start too with, you're both business development executives, and maybe half of our guests are familiar with what business development is, but probably half is not. Could you walk us through, maybe to start with, like, kind of what that title is, but I'd love to hear from each of you the nitty gritty of what a representative day might look like. I know a lot of our listeners appreciate the granular detail of the ins and outs of what a day might look like.
Yeah, I think one of the fun things at Palantir is your title is what you make of it. I mean, technically, if you look at my contract, I am a, quote, business cultivation engineer, right? It's not defined. What it is it's someone that's relied upon within Palantir to build relationships, to establish trust and credibility with prospective and existing customers, to help them have an advocate for whatever their problems are, whatever their greatest challenges are, someone to bring a team in, you know, to bring in folks who are, you know, just acutely focused on the engineering solutions, or who have other skill sets that they can bring to bear. Right. It's bringing those people in the door and helping to put our best assets against those problem sets. You know, my role is a little different than some that do business development in that I have probably a greater strategy role as we look to build our footprint on the commercial side, in particular in the Carolinas. I'm really leading that. And so I have a lot of insight from our CEO, Alex Karp, our president, Sham, our chief of staff, Gavin, and others, right? We have an iterative conversation about where we're headed and what our priorities should be and what assets we're going to bring to bear to solve those toughest challenges and which customers we should really be focused on a day-to-day basis and in the years ahead. So what does that look like on a normal day? I don't know. I wake up and I kind of ground myself to start the day. I mean, I'm kind of old fashioned. I sit down and I pray, and then I go for a run or a lift, and I come back and I read a little bit. I have breakfast with my wife and kids. Like, so these are all things other than the running that I didn't get to do that much in the military, right? So it's actually pretty nice. Center my day, start with my family. And then, much like my old career, I'm into emails, I'm into phone calls, I'm meeting with customers. It may be I'm getting on a plane and I'm flying somewhere for an internal meeting or an external meeting with customers. It may be that I'm driving to RTP, you know, around Raleigh-Durham area in North Carolina because there's something we want to work on there. But most days for me, I get up, I spend some time with my family, and then I get after it. And whatever that priority is that we've laid out for that day, that's what we're focused on.
That's great, Mike. And I love that thought of grounding before the day. I think that's something that people could apply to any job that they do. And also just appreciating the differences of, you know, there's advantages and pros and cons of being out of the military. But one of them for you, it sounds like, is being able to have that time to sit down with your family. How about you, Chris? What would you say?
Yeah, no, I think... the thing that resonates most with me about this job is being able to exercise that sense of initiative that you also had in the military, that exercising commander's intent, that going back to the academy days of message to Garcia. The idea of hiring me was help us break into the U.S. market. We need to do better there. How can you help us? And then it was me learning the company, chatting with folks, developing my own thesis as to what that would look like. And that thesis is, I think there's a compelling narrative between my background in national security, the company's background, what it believes in terms of a purpose, and those great American companies that are so intertwined with America, you can't pull them apart. And as go their economic strength, so go the United States. I can connect with those people, and that is my thesis, and that's what I do on a daily basis. And I'd say you break the day up into big chunks. 50% of that is internal, trying to figure out, you know, who can help me do this? Where are the other experts? What other research has already been done that I can leverage? 25% of that is my own research, and 25% of that is outreach. Outreach, either actual customer client calls or just who can I call that I know in my network that I can learn more about this. And within all that, to Mike's point, is where does the balance, the family fit into this? So I'll tell you a quick story about 4 weeks ago, something that has never happened before, but it's something that's encouraged at Palantir and I love it. So in February, it was a Friday, it snowed. I drove into work anyway, and my son, I got a brand new phone. I gave him my old one. He's 9. He texts me. He's like, "Hey, Daddy." I'm like, "Hey, buddy." He's like, "What you doing?" I'm like, "I'm at work." He's like, "What are you doing at work?" I'm like, "Well, I'm reading some stuff. I'm talking to people." He's like, "I didn't go to school today because of the snow." I'm like, "I saw. I got the email." He's like, "I also saw that Whitetail has night skiing from 5 to 10. Want to go?" And I'm like, "Absolutely." So I called those people I had that afternoon. I said, "Hey, would you mind? We had a snowstorm. I'd like to go do this." And they're like, "Absolutely, go do that. Let's push it up till Monday." That's the culture that's encouraged. And so my son and I went night skiing for the first time ever. I love it. So that to me is the right sort of balance of what Palantir offers.
I think that's so awesome. That's such a great, it's great that that's supported by the culture. I think that there's not, not every organization would support that sort of trade-off. And, you know, I'm just of that persuasion, happy cows produce good milk. It's like, you know, if you're really fulfilled outside of work, you're going to be a lot more productive in work and things like that. You know, it's not like you're avoiding work. You're shuffling when it's done to kind of match what your life is. I really like that. I had two questions about your backgrounds, but maybe I'll just start with, for each of you, you know, it seems like you had a fairly non-technical background, and yet you're doing business development as what's arguably one of the most technologically advanced companies in the world. Could you talk a little bit about the learning curve in doing that and how you approach that? And in particular, I'm thinking of someone listening who might not be, you know, having done technology in the military and thinking of, is that even in the cards for them once they get out of the military?
Yeah, so let me start with the thought that I think most folks who have served in the military, if they were able to step back and really examine their careers and their skill sets, they would be shocked at just how technically competent they are. You know, I went to the U.S. Naval Academy. My undergraduate major was political science. You know, I'm a lawyer by trade. But when I was at Annapolis, I was taking about 20 plus credits every semester, the 3 semesters of calculus and 2 of systems engineering and 2 of electrical engineering, et cetera, et cetera. I started off as a surface warfare officer as an engineer aboard ship. I had about 100 people working for me, and pretty much everything that made the ship go, I was responsible for. I moved over to be a navigator aboard an Aegis destroyer, and we were putting the first electronic charts aboard ships for the Pacific Fleet. You know, and I litigated for a few years, so not hyper technical there, but then I got recruited in the special operations community as a lawyer. And some of my most significant work was examining things like electronic warfare, electronic surveillance, comparing that to signals intelligence, looking at how we could leverage some of the capabilities we built to do computer network operations. And then frankly, for about 12 years, everywhere I went, I was always the primary advisor for special operations counterterrorism, but also cyber, electronic warfare, information operations, special technologies, and intelligence, right? So it was always an ultra technical environment where I was never the subject matter expert. But I learned very quickly that I had to sit down with those subject matter experts and sit down with the books and sit down with the technology and really, really learn, right? And one of the skills you develop, I think, in the military very well is how to adapt to different environments, how to adapt to different technologies, how to learn from different people that you're relying upon, and then how to take those different things and use them, right? As an individual, as a collective, And so I think for me, as I slid over to really private practice initially, I was a quote cyber lawyer. Most people who are quote cyber lawyers are quote cyber lawyers in name only. Very few of them. Most of them are litigators or regulatory lawyers who know that their firm needs to be able to do quote cyber law, right? We built a slightly different team where we were getting deep into the ones and zeros, and it was a lot of fun. So for me, moving to Palantir, none of that means I showed up at Palantir and suddenly I am the SME on Foundry or Gotham. That's just not it. I'm not writing code. You know, on that spectrum of the hyper-technical code writer or the executive, I'm more the executive than I am the hyper-technical code writer. And yet the military gave me an incredibly strong foundation to come into this environment, to listen, to learn, to iterate, and to contribute.
Yeah, that's great. And I hope for listeners still on active duty, I think that that's hopefully a message of encouragement for Mike, where I like how he says, if you step back, you'll be surprised at how much you've been immersed in technology and how much that is a part of who you are, regardless of what your focus was in the military. What about you, Chris? What was that like?
So the learning curve is unbelievably steep, and I love it. I love every minute of it. I don't know that it's quite as steep as when I learned how to jump out of airplanes between day one and Friday. Yeah. I was doing it at night under NVGs with oxygen masks. The impacts of doing it correctly are certainly lower. But anyway, my undergraduate in chemistry. For years, it wasn't very helpful. It helped me in my homebrew beer hobby and maybe a little bit of explosives in the teams. But it's about how you look and solve problems in that environment. It's look at the problem. Let's take it apart. Let's see what's going on. Let's see if we can fix it part by part, put it back together, and go. So it's all about problem solving. Particularly that mindset and that type of thinking is extremely helpful in this role, as you help and you participate with teams that are breaking apart problems. You can see how that flows. My graduate degree, not necessarily overly helpful when you first look at it, but it's a strategy degree. It's about making choices. It's about resource allotment. That's exactly what I'm doing right now with this message to Garcia. It's what resources are out there, what decisions do I have to make, what choices are we making, and what do we think the end result is going to be. So those two things come together remarkably well in this role.
That's great. The other piece of this, and it's overlapped, but sometimes I feel like when I talk to people, especially in the military or recently transitioned veterans, it seems like there's a trend to think very linearly about their career. And it's usually in the sense of, I did X in the military, therefore I need to do X as a civilian. It's like a direct translation. And that does work for many people. You've built up a lot of career capital. You can cash that in many ways for autonomy or money or whatever on the other side. But I look at each of you and I feel like what you're doing now is fairly different, certainly from what you did in the military, and also, you know, for Mike, what you did immediately after the military. And so when it comes to your prior work experience, in what ways does that help you in your current role? In what ways is that an asset? And in what ways, or what advice would you have for people about doing something completely different?
For me, it was when I started my transition, I was uncertain as to exactly what I wanted to do. The one thing I was certain about is I did not want to stay in the government, either in uniform or as a GS or assistant secretary, things like that. Certainly those were all available to me, but outside of that, I wasn't sure. What I learned through my transition process was, maybe to your point, it's being a SEAL was what I did. It's not who I am. And it took me a long time to figure out who I am and what I wanted to do. But to be able to look at what made me successful in the teams and find that same sort of environment and culture where the things that I believed in, the things that drove me to be successful, I could do in that culture. And it wasn't through only about 50 or 60 conversations that I found that in the tech space. And so for me, early in those conversations, it was not knowing, it was listening to my gut. If when I started having a conversation about maybe a federal facing role in a commercial company and my stomach kind of turned, I didn't pursue that. But when I had this out of the box conversation and my excitement level went up, I was like, we got to run at that because it just feels right. And when you run hard at something long enough, man, it'll open up wide.
That's great. Anything to add to Mike? Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I guess let me focus on what's detrimental is probably too strong a word, but what makes it a challenge in just a second. I think like Mus, I'm one who is just stubborn enough and probably skilled enough to do most anything. Emphasis on the stubborn, less so on the skill, at least in my case. Right. But I learned that in part in the military. Mus and I played baseball together in Annapolis. And we had a coach who was a bit of a curmudgeon. And he used to like really, really focus on character in ways that are somewhat probably reminiscent of a guy like Bobby Knight. If you're trying to analogize, they're not exactly the same person, but there are probably some similarities there. And you can see how you could come up in that sort of rough environment while you're at the Naval Academy, by the way, and you know, believe you can do just about anything. But to that point, I think for me, there are probably two things that are challenging. One of those is when you believe you can do anything, you will oftentimes persist, endure, drive harder and harder and harder in a way that isn't always beneficial. And I think a lot of us have carried a pack for so long and done so many wonderful things that we're genuinely humbled to have been participants in and even proud of, that we feel like when we slide over into the commercial side, we just keep running and we don't really realize the toll that some of those burdens have taken on us over time. And so this leads me to my second piece of this, and that is, in the military, when you've gone so long, when you've been on this run and you've never really stopped, it's hard to one, understand how to slow down, and two, in the civilian context, oftentimes it's hard to understand what success is. It's hard to understand what you're running towards and how you measure that. For me in the military, you know, there were times when Mus and his guys were running an op and I was, you know, a legal advisor. And you know success, whether you capture someone or you get the right intel you're going for, if you're in the cyber domain, whether you create defects against people and things you're trying to create, if you're litigating, you know if you win or lose a trial, right? There are things that are very measurable. You know, there are corollaries when you do the kind of stuff we're doing. You know if you're trying to earn the business from a customer, you know if you get it or not, but everything in between, right, which is a lot of that gray space in the early work, it's hard to really understand whether you're getting things quote right. And so I guess for me, the lesson learned on that second piece is you have to really begin with a clear expectation of what you're working towards, right? What success is and what it's not. It's very different for every individual. It's different in every capacity. And sometimes it's different by the day, but you really have to be able to figure out what it is you're working towards, or else you're just kind of running and you never stop. And that's just not a good long-term plan.
Just a couple things I'll call out for listeners. I love when Chris was talking about this steep learning curve, and I think listeners can hear in his voice how much he loves that, how much he really does enjoy the steep learning curve, and he analyzed or compared it to jumping out of planes. And I think that's one thing to consider, and fulfillment of feeling challenged and growing can lead to a lot of excitement, and that's something I think some guests have written in about this work-life balance fear, and that the sense is if you're doing a job with a steep learning curve, it might detract from other areas. I just want to point out there is that benefit of being passionate and alive about what you're doing. And then, Mike, I really love what you were saying. I kind of interpret that to be developing that wisdom when you get out of the military of there is a time to push through, and there's a time when you're grinding bone on bone, and that's going to have long-term ramifications that might not be, you know, certainly we're justified
in many of your settings in the military and outside of the military is probably rarely justified. And so developing that wisdom of like when to push through, when to break through an obstacle, and when to take a little bit of a step back and get that perspective and figure out what to do, and often going around a wall instead of having to break through it. And I also love that the second component. I think that's a very nuanced point you brought up around the complexity of evaluating success outside of the military. And I would even add the ability each listener has to define what success is for them and to define that in their own job and in their own life. And I've had guests on the show where success is a 9-to-5 that pays the bills and they can pursue some sort of sport or pursue some sort of hobby or their family. And I have others where success is 130 hours a week to bring a new company into the world. And neither of those are right, but it's completely aligned with whatever your values are. And that will also change over time. And so I think that gets back to Chris's point about constantly checking in with yourself and your body of like, is this still valid? Is this still right? But I love the points that you made there. You both also kind of come from really impressive educational backgrounds. And one of the most common questions I hear from listeners, especially from officers in the military, is when they get out of the military is, should I go directly to industry or should I pursue advanced education? I realize that some of your education was done while in the military, but I'm just kind of curious your thoughts, particularly with a company like Palantir, how to evaluate whether to pursue education or whether you're better off going straight into industry.
Yeah, I think this is also a very personal decision, right? And I think everybody's a little different. There are those who would want to go into certain industries where it could be advantageous to go get another degree there. I'm very fortunate. I have 8 years of free education from Annapolis to Georgetown Law to Harvard Law School. Maybe I'm just cheap. But I think part of, you know, if you ask me, hey, the stuff you learned at Harvard Law School, are you applying that day to day? The answer is probably no, right? But the relationships I built there and the relationships I built at Georgetown, the relationships I built at Annapolis, right? Those are the things that I'm really carrying forward. And I think that it's hard to figure out in advance of a degree program what those relationship opportunities might be. But I think for those who make the choice to go get that degree, that's something I would encourage them to really be mindful of. I was never a big guy for networking when I was younger. I actually kind of detested it to my own detriment. You know, I had a really close group of friends that I played baseball with or that were in my company and those sorts of things. Guys I served with, guys I went to war with. But I didn't really network so much. And then suddenly I'm sitting in Harvard for a year and, you know, I have people like Jack Goldsmith and James Comey and Jim Baker, Alan Dershowitz, Larry Lucchino, CEO of the Boston Red Sox, you know, who I'm interacting with. I mean, Larry was kind enough once to invite my wife and my newborn son to come take in a Baltimore Orioles game. You know, and you know, that's probably not the thing that's going to benefit your career, but it sure helped my work-life balance. And I just think that, the thing I took away from my degrees more than anything else were those personal relationships, knowing the people that I might not have had the opportunity to know, but also building really long lasting bonds with guys like Musk that I've carried forward. You know, does Palantir have sort of a policy or a preferred approach of go get an advanced degree or not? No, I don't think we do. I think we're looking for people who can add the most value, who can be impactful. And we take them as they come. It's really, you know, a long time ago, I heard, you know, someone say it takes all kinds. And something I learned was very true in the Navy and throughout the joint career I had. I think Palantir really epitomizes that.
That's great.
I mean, I had a lot of conversations just during my transition, and they were about 50-50 in the go get a degree and don't. And just as the point that Mike said, it, the advice they gave, it wasn't in the education, it was in the relationships. And I can see that. And maybe that, because I didn't do that, maybe my my networking took a little while to get started, particularly as I wanted to move into the commercial space, something different than what I had done. And so I think there could be some benefit there, although this is a hypothesis at this point. But I did not feel at a disadvantage in going to these companies by not having a business degree or anything like that. So I didn't feel that was the case. I didn't feel that I was put in a different bucket. I felt that I had the same opportunity everybody else, even if it may have taken me a little longer to get to the right spot.
That's great. I love that. And then I also wanted to ask, I know we're nearing the end of our time. I always like to ask about resources, and I'm particularly thinking of the percentage of our audience who's deployed right now, or, you know, but what they could do that's tangible. And I'm curious, when it comes to your own careers, if there's anything you would recommend, it could be books or podcasts or movies, conferences, webinars, anything that you would recommend that a listener check out.
Yeah, I know Mike's got some good ones, so I'll start real briefly. I wish that I would have known about Beyond the Uniform when I was on the other side of the uniform. Because I went back and listened to some of this stuff, like George Randall, a couple other folks. I mean, you guys have put some great folks on here, so thanks for doing that. And so I'll certainly plug that. But for me, here are the big three resources I used. American Corporate Partners, nonprofit out of New York. Unbelievable perspective from the other side. Breakline, we've already talked about. And then the other one for me was Commit. When I didn't know where else to start, I called Commit and simply said, I'm starting on this journey. Where can I go? How can I get started? So those three were great building blocks for me and great resources along the way.
And I'll just interject right before Mike, for listeners, I don't have the episode numbers on hand, but we have an interview with American Corporate Partners, with Breakline, like I already said, and the Commit Foundation. So I'll put the link to those episodes in the show notes. If you're interested in learning more about those organizations, all three of them are fantastic. All three of them are free for veterans. And so definitely check out those. How about you, Mike? What would you say?
Yeah, maybe I'll go old school and I'll just give a couple books. So I don't think the books themselves are old school though. So 0 to 1 by Peter Thiel, one of the founders of Palantir. It's really eye opening, particularly for someone who didn't work in the commercial sector for the vast majority of his professional life. It's really about creating something new, right? And how you do that, and not only that, how you dominate in this new market, in this new space. The second one I'd recommend is Getting Things Done by David Allen. Interestingly, 0 to 1 and Getting Things Done are both books that when you come to Palantir for onboarding, they give you these books for free and they say, hey, as you're getting ready to come on board, take a look at these things. They'll help you not only sort of acclimate yourself to Palantir, but they'll help you think bigger thoughts about not only what you can be, but what we can be collectively. Alan's book's about organization, it's about prioritization, and it's about getting results, right? So it's kind of interesting if you overlay the two, right? Creating something new, the Thiel piece, and then the Allen piece, then organizing, prioritizing, and getting results. Those are very, very practical. The third one will seem like it has nothing to do with what we're talking about, but I'm going to say it anyway. Barbarian Days by William Finnegan. Winner of the Pulitzer Prize. It is sort of labeled as a surfing memoir, I actually think this book might have more value for your listeners than either the others I mentioned or any of the stuff must say. Maybe not your podcast, but Finnegan essentially goes on this rollicking tour of his life and the world and surfing. And it's about a process, right? It's about this incredible exploration and this journey and all the highs and lows and the things he went through to ultimately become who he is, right? In a sense, it's about this art of surfing, but really it's about something more. And I think if one was to take the very practical lessons from 0 to 1 and all about creating something new to take the practical lessons from Getting Things Done and prioritization, you still have to figure out, who am I and where do I want to be? And what is this going to look like? And understand that it's probably not going to look like what you expect it to look like. It's going to be a journey. There are going to be highs and lows. And ultimately, you're going to come out on the other side, ideally for the better.
That's great. And I'll remind listeners in the show notes, as well as in the resources section of our website, Audible will give a free audiobook to any Beyond the Uniform listener. There's a little link in there. And I plan on checking out. I have read 0 to 1, loved it. I think it's incredibly insightful, particularly if you're interested in entrepreneurship. I haven't read Getting Things Done or Barbarian Days, but I'll put the link in the show notes for listeners. And you can listen to that absolutely for free. The audiobooks are a great way while you're running or biking or whatever else, flying it. A jet or whatever you're doing right now to listen and learn some of the stuff on the go. I always like to keep, I want to make extra room at the end. I always like to keep the last question open-ended, and you can answer it one of two ways or both, because I've really enjoyed each of your perspectives. One way of viewing it is kind of, what do we not talk about that you want to make sure listeners know? I'm sure we covered a lot of ground. I'm sure there's things we didn't cover. Or another way of phrasing it would be, you know, what do you want to make sure you leave listeners with, even if it's something that you have shared already?
I'll share one, and that is probably for me what was unexpectedly the most difficult thing, and that was talking about me. You see that just in all these interviews, it's, you grow up in a military culture that is, it's us and we. This is what we did. We were successful as a leader. If the organization failed, here's what I did. I failed this. As a SEAL, we're, you know, the deed is all, not the glory, the silent warrior. So I had to come out and talk about things that I have kept and hidden. That's not a word. I've kept hidden for 20 years. Each person has their own journey to find how they want to talk about themselves through that place. It needs to be authentic. And it's your story. It's just give yourself the time to learn how to tell it. Talk to people who have different perspectives. Talk to other guys that have transitioned, how they talk about it, and become comfortable with it and try it. If it doesn't feel right, hold back. So I would tell you, Justin, that 6 months ago, what I'm telling you right now and having this conversation would not be possible. It's a continuous journey to get more comfortable with talking about who you are, what you did, and why it's important.
I love that. Before we go over to Mike, I love that piece of advice. I would say if there's a top three list, if there's ever a Family Feud episode of top five things that come up on Beyond the Uniform episodes, one of the things that almost every guest mentions is the difficulty of speaking about themselves. And I think that, Chris, that's probably the best answer I've heard to that challenge, in that, I mean, I love what you're saying about it, the sense I got is like, it's easy for us to share the success and then to take the failure. And it's almost like learning a new way to do it. But I love with what you're saying on that, Chris, is everyone will approach this differently. And I think if listeners take nothing else away from this, it's that the advice you gave, give yourself time to find your way and have that awareness that this is a problem that most military veterans share, is the difficulty speaking of them, of their own accomplishments, because we've been conditioned against that. And so give yourself the room to find your own way. And like he said, you can leverage other people in doing that, but just realizing that that's going to be a learning curve there.
Absolutely.
Mike, what would you say?
Yeah, I'd say take your time. You know, Chris says in one context, give yourself time. I think that is really, really good advice. I think it is incredibly easy to undersell yourself, even when you are willing to talk about yourself. I think it's incredibly easy to rush to failure, to jump into something that's not the right fit, to lose yourself and kind of forget who you are because you're trying to succeed in a new venue. I think for me, I got some pretty good advice that I ignored before I retired. And that was, give yourself some downtime. You know, I was going to a great law firm, and I was going in as a partner, which a lot of folks who are judge advocates don't have that opportunity. The firm wanted me sooner rather than later. They waited for about 6 months because I was going through the retirement process. And I felt like I owed it to them to get there as soon as I possibly could. So I retired on a Friday. I woke up Saturday morning in Alexandria, Virginia. I rolled over and I said to my wife, Erin, all right, you ready to go? She looked like she wanted to punch me. So I said, how about Sunday? And then Sunday we packed up our two young children. We drove to Charlotte, North Carolina. I started work on Monday. I never looked back. That first year I was everywhere from Tel Aviv to Tokyo. I was billing hours. And I think if you were to look at it objectively from a billable hour standpoint, from a, the development of the methodology, the team building, all the big wins that the firm had, we were a resounding success for the two-year time frame. If you looked at it, and I was honest on a personal standpoint, something I probably wouldn't have been willing to say out loud some time ago either, on some levels, I failed miserably, absolutely failed miserably. Kind of lost sight of what was most important of me personally, who I was. And I don't mean that, in some catastrophic sense, but I mean in the sense of, had I actually listened, had I actually not picked up my pack and just ran straight ahead once again, I probably would have done some things differently. Now the good news is Palantir picked me up, and my old firm was wonderful and everybody was great and we had a great time, but Palantir gave me myself back. Palantir gave me some creative space. They oriented me back not only to the mission, but to me. And I think had I taken more time, that's where I would have started in the first place.
That's great. I mean, I can definitely relate, and I think a lot of guests can. I think that a lot of us, we idle at a slightly higher speed than most, and so we're so eager to move forward on to the next thing. And the value, my wife always says this, and I hate it. She always says it takes time to save time, and there's some aspect of that, of reorienting and getting your bearings and giving yourself and your family the breathing room. And I think it also speaks again to the culture of Palantir, like the one that they're giving you these books when you join, and two, they're helping you kind of in that reorientation process. To me, speaks of an organization that's investing in their team, investing in their employees, and that's something wonderful for listeners to consider when you're thinking of where to apply. Well, Chris and Mike, I really appreciate both of your time today, and I know that listeners will benefit a lot from this. In the show notes for listeners at beyondtheuniform.org, we'll have links to everything, links to Palantir, which is palantir.com, as well as everything else we discussed. But thank you for sharing your story with us today.
Justin, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Well, thank you so much for listening and for supporting Beyond the Uniform. Beyond the Uniform is produced and edited by me, Justin Asiri. Our staff is entirely part-time. They do this on nights and weekends out of the goodness of their hearts to give back to the military community. Our director of outreach is Steve Bain, who relentlessly books guests, finds sponsors, puts together our newsletter, and thousands of other critical tasks every single week, all behind the scenes to keep Beyond the Uniform running smoothly. Our editor is Kathleen Dillon, who listens to and transcribes every single episode to help out those who don't have the time to listen to the show. It has a major impact on our site's SEO value, which helps people find us through Google. Our data analytics and insights advisor is Andrew Woolridge, who pours over the data each and every month to help us better understand how to best serve the Beyond the Uniform audience. Our digital production work is done by Michael Cummings, who puts together custom artwork for every episode. If you're enjoying Beyond the Uniform, the best way to help us out is by telling your friends and fellow service members and veterans. iTunes reviews, believe it or not, have a big impact on getting the word out as well. So if you have a chance to leave a positive review, that is greatly appreciated. If you know of a business that would like to get their product or service in front of a military audience, we are always on the lookout for sponsors, which helps us subsidize the cost of putting this show together. And if you haven't yet signed up for our newsletter, you can do so at beyondtheuniform.io. We send out a newsletter twice a month, and it is a treasure trove of helpful information for your civilian career and transition. And be sure to check out our coaching program, where you can be connected with a subsidized professional, certified executive and career coach to help you in your career decision making. Thank you for listening, and I'll be back next week with more stories from military veterans about their civilian career. Take care.